The Sefer names through Parsha Frameshear for Parshios Matos Maaseh will focus on the Sefer Elef Lamata by Rav Ephraim Zalman Margolios, who lived from 1762 until 1828. That phrase comes up in Parshios Matos in Perek Lamed Aleph, Pesukim Dalet Hey Anvav. In Pesuk Dalet it says, Elef Lamata, Chomatos Yisrael Tezhul Otzava, that 1,000 for each tribe, 1,000 for each tribe, from all the tribes of Israel, you should send them to the army. So Ephraim Zalman Margolios was from Galicia. He was very well connected with many Gedolim of the time. He corresponded with Rabbi Yecheskel Landau, Thanod Behuda, Shagas Aryeh, Rabbi Kiva Iger, and the Chassam Sofer. He established a banking house, which actually made him very wealthy, and therefore he was able to open a yeshiva in his own home. He wrote several svarim, like the Beis Ephraim, the Yad Ephraim, the Shari Ephraim, and the Mata Ephraim. He was also a contemporary of the Ketzos, Rav Aryeh Leib Heller, and the Nesivos, Rav Yaakov Lorberbaum. He was known for being a descendant of Rashi, the Maharsha, and the Rama. Because he was independently wealthy, he never held a pulpit rabbi position. He became a rare prototype of one who successfully combined great wealth with great learning. He was well-versed in Kabbalah. He was involved in a controversy with Rav Levi Yitzchak Mivarditchov over Yoshua Heschel's book. He demonstrated that it had some certain Sabbatean leanings and was thus able to prevent its publication. He is probably most known for his Sefer Mata Ephraim, which was published in 1834 on the laws of Elul and the Yamino Ra'im, as well as Kaddish. Mishneh Brura quotes the Mata Ephraim in the Halachos Yamino Ra'im all the time. And the Elef Lamata is his commentary on the bottom of the Mata Ephraim that provides the Makoros, the sources for everything, often elaborates on something that he writes in the Mata Ephraim. Just to give a sense of how chashuv he was amongst his peers, the Chassam Sofer eulogized him. This is recorded in the Ishim Veshitos, page 79, by saying, every day his voice is heard in our study halls through the words of his books. So this is the Chassam Sofer talking about Rav Ephraim Zalman Margolios. How did he get the last name Margolios? So the story goes that Rav Yitzchak, who was the father of Rashi, was a great scholar, but never wanted to use Torah as a means of making a living. So he opened a store that specialized in precious stones. So he was happy in life, except after being married for 10 years, he was still not blessed with a child. He wanted it so much, he never complained. He lived his life as normal. One day, he came into possession of a truly remarkable gem, a precious stone. And news of this precious stone, which was so rare, spread throughout the city, ultimately reaching the ears of the local bishop. So the bishop decided that he wanted to acquire such a rare stone and have it mounted in a statue in the main cathedral of the town. So he sent word that he was prepared to offer a great sum of money to Rav Yitzchak for the jewel. So Rav Yitzchak discussed the matter with his wife and said, I can't sell a possession of mine, knowing it will be used in a cathedral. So he sent a letter replying to the bishop, saying that he cannot sell the gem. So although the bishop accepted this answer, some of the more extreme priests developed an ugly scheme by which they hoped to force Rav Yitzchak to sell the gem. They succeeded in getting him onto a ship. They sailed it down a river. And at that point, they threatened him that they would throw him overboard unless he handed over the gem. So Rav Yitzchak didn't hesitate. He, at that moment, almost like Jonah, he threw the gem, which cost him a small fortune, into the water, rather lose money than his principles. And no sooner had the water swallowed up the gem than a baskel came from Shemayim and said that in place of this precious stone, Hashem will send you another precious stone in the form of a son who will illuminate the eyes of Israel with his Torah and wisdom. And that year, Rav Yitzchak and his wife gave birth to a son who was named Shlomo, who became the great Rashi. And because of this story, one of the families that descended from Rashi named itself Margolios, or Margolis, referring to the precious stone. When Margolios was young, his father asked him if he thought he could use a Sefer Yetzirah, a Kabbalistic Sefer, to create a man using Hashem's name, and then use that man to count as a tenth man in a minyan. So at a very young age, Ephraim Zalman already answered that, well, the Gemara in Brachos Daf Mem Zayin tells us that Rabbi Eliezer released his servant, freed his Eved, in order to make a minyan, even though it's clear from other sources that Rabbi Eliezer was well-versed in Kabbalah and knew how to use the Sefer Yetzirah. And over there, it was usher to release an Eved. It was just for the sake of a communal mitzvah, he was permitted to do that. So if it was permissible to create a person from the Sefer Yetzirah and use such a person to count for a minyan, Rabbi Eliezer would have never released an Eved. So it must be, it's not permitted. Lest you think this is not a relevant shayla, the Mishnah Brura actually discusses this shayla. He quotes the Shas Jewish Chacham Tzvi, who says that no, Lamaisa, you can't count such an individual created from Sefer Yetzirah for a minyan. But his proof is from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Samechei, which says that Rava created a person from Sefer Yetzirah, but Reb Zeira returned him to the dust. And if there was anything positive, says the Chacham Tzvi, that you could use such a man to use for a minyan, then Reb Zeira would have never destroyed him. It's told that Reb Margolios always dressed in very clean clothing, but there was one thing he used to splurge on, spend a lot of money on, and that was an expensive silk hat. There was once a rich nobleman who met him and asked him why he spends so much on an expensive hat, but not so much on his clothing. As we, the nobleman said, do the opposite. We spend so much on our clothing, but we barely even wear hats. So Ephraim Zalman, without missing a beat, answered that non-Jews are very preoccupied with their bodies, focused on the perfection of the body. And therefore, that's reflected in the way you dress, that you spend so much time and effort on the clothing that covers your body. We as Jews are more concerned with our heads, our mind, education, knowledge, truth. And therefore, we spend most of our efforts in providing the best protection for our head vis-a-vis the hat. Rav Shlomo Kluger, who overlapped his lifetime with Rav Chaim Zalman, in Chelek 1 of his Sefer called In Dima, he writes the Hakdama, which is an entire tribute to Rav Chaim Zalman Margolios, and how amazing he was, and how tough it was when he passed away. And Rav Kluger writes that it really pained him to the core. We'll quote three limudim that are mentioned in the Elef Lamata, the commentary that Rav Margolios wrote on his Sefer Mata Ephraim. The first one is that there's a widespread custom for parents to give their children brachos on Friday night and Erev Yom Kippur. Interesting. Why specifically Friday night and Erev Yom Kippur? You know, if we're telling parents to give their kids brachos, why not do it every day? So Elf Lamata, he writes that we find in Tanakh that parents gave blessings to their children immediately before they died. So why is that? Why is the bracha appropriate on the deathbed? So the answer is that that's when people are often thinking in the clearest way. They have the greatest perspective. Everything, all the pettiness has been removed, and a person could have a clear mind. And when one gives a bracha, he has to give the bracha with a clear mind, have his perspectives, have his proper insight. Similarly, the reason why parents give their children brachos on Friday night is that that's when one's minds are most clear. They've had a long week, they've been very busy at work, Friday night comes, the mind is clear, one can relax and focus on what is important. And it's at that time that parents will have the greatest ability to have proper intent and kavana when blessing their children. And the same would be true of Erev Yom Kippur, that we're approaching the Yom HaDin, and it shifts the perspective as to what we really prioritize, and that's what we want to instill in parents as they bless their children. A second limud quoted by the Elf Lamata is that there's a Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah which says that the reason the Kohen Gadol did not wear gold garments when performing the service in the Beis HaMikdash was in order not to encourage the Satan to prosecute. Because if the Satan would see gold, he would say, it would remind him of the Egel HaZahav. See, these Jews once worshipped the golden calf, and now they're going to try to serve you, Hashem. He would try to prosecute the Jews for the sin of the golden calf. This comes up lahalacha. Rabbi Kiva Eger writes that because of this, some of the minhag not to wear anything gold on Yom Kippur. Rabbi Kiva Eger notes this would not apply to women or Levim who did not donate to the Egel HaZahav, and therefore would not be prosecuted now because of that sin. However, the Betzel HaChachma in the Tshuva, he knows that this minhag does not apply to all items, as he quotes the Elef Lamata, who says this minhag should only apply not to a gold watch or a gold necklace, it should only apply to gold decorations on a kittel. Why? He says that the Gemara Rosh Hashanah on Da'af Chavav implies that since gold was used by the golden calf, it cannot be used to achieve kapara, to achieve atonement. So the implication is that the only problem with wearing gold is to wear the gold on an item that's used to achieve kapara. But one wears a watch or a necklace, he's not wearing that watch or necklace to achieve kapara. And therefore, only a kittel or a religious item which is used as a way of achieving kapara, perhaps it would be problematic to wear gold. The Gemara in Yuma, Daf Lamed Zayin, says that Rishua ben Gamla was praised for making gold lots. Munvaz was praised for making gold handles of the kior. But that makes sense because those items were not being used to achieve kapara. So similarly, watches, glasses, necklaces shouldn't be a problem. However, the Mishnah Brewer writes, La halacha, the minhag is for women not to wear jewelry on Yom Kippur like they normally do on Shabbos and Yom Tov, seemingly for a separate reason, because of the emas hadin, the fear of judgment that we're not supposed to be dressing up when we have such a scary day. And finally, very brief comment of the Aleph Lamate, when it comes to Kol Isha. So we generally think of the Isra of Kol Isha as referring to women singing. Question is, what about a woman saying Kaddish in Shul? Well, the Kaddish is said in somewhat of a monotone. So can a woman recite Kaddish in front of men? Or is that a violation of Kol Isha? So the Mata Ephraim in Hilchos Kaddish Yasom paskins that it's Usur because it's Kol Isha. And the Elf Lamata, Ramagralis explains, that in our society, where sexual immorality has become so prevalent, and this was even back then, so Kal v'chomer nowadays, any situation where a man might get pleasure from hearing the woman's voice should be discouraged. And therefore, he paskin that a woman should not recite Kaddish by herself so that men could hear her. However, Ravadi Yosef in Atshuva notes that most poskim do allow a woman to recite the bracha of Hagomel in front of 10 men, which is the same monotone, and therefore seemingly the same should be true for Kaddish. The Chavos Yair in the Tshuva paskins that the recitation of Kaddish is not in the category of Kol Isha, as it is not recited with a tune, and would therefore not arouse any desire in men. But the Alfa Mate did have a Chumrah in this regard. So that's a little bit about Rav Ephraim Zalman Margolios, several of his Svarim, and several very interesting Limudim in the Mata Ephraim, and the commentary in the Mata Ephraim, the Aleph Lamata.